IB Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. It's Wednesday, which means we're about halfway through the week, getting ready for Notre Dame versus Texas A&M. Notre Dame enters sort of a Wednesday practice period today, which is sort of it's kind of the big week, the big day. It's your last full practice or full padded practice. It's your last day where you're doing more team situations, and then of course tomorrow, Thursday, is a lot of situational football. Friday will be travel day, walkthroughs, and then Saturday's game day. So Notre Dame is getting closer and closer to being where they need to be to know whether or not this team is going to be ready to go out there and win this football game on Saturday. So it's a big one, obviously, from a perception standpoint. I'm going to have a show on Friday. I'm going to go live on Friday, and one of the things I'm going to talk about is, what does this game mean for Notre Dame? Because there's a very interesting debate going on where, especially on the board, and I'm assuming it's on other channels as well. I don't read that, and I'm not on social media as much as I used to be. This notion that all of a sudden, Texas A&M is this loaded, talented team, and people in the chat that are obsessed with recruiting rankings and all these other type of things, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that, and all this hand-wringing and complaining about how Notre Dame doesn't win games like this, and A&M is really good. And then you point out, like, hey, they beat NC State, they beat Duke, they beat Syracuse, and they're like, oh, those teams suck. And the reality is all three of those teams have a better record than Texas A&M in the last 2 years. And so there needs to be a proper understanding of what this game means. It is a big game. I'll dive more into it during the week. It is a big game. It is an important game for Notre Dame. It's not an end-all, be-all game for Notre Dame, win or lose. And beating Texas A&M does not mean that you're now going to go beat Georgia or Ohio State. They are not that program. Losing to Texas A&M doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It's not good. There's no good spin. But as I've said before, we've seen teams win championships the same season they lost to teams that are just like A&M, if not worse, right? I mean, Clemson, the first year they won the title, lost at home in November to an 8-5 Pitt team. And if you look at 17, Clemson, who made the college football playoff as number one seed, lost on the road to a 4-8 Syracuse. Ohio State in 2014 lost at home by 2 touchdowns in September to a Virginia Tech team that finished 7-6. This game is not the end of the world whether you lose, and it does not mean bring on Georgia, bring on Ohio State when you win. This is a game that will be a battle. This is a good football team. Yes, they have talent. So does Notre Dame. Yes, they have good coaches. So does Notre Dame. This is an opportunity for Notre Dame to go out there and make a statement. And unfortunately, in my opinion, the biggest statement that needs to be made is to some Notre Dame fans who just, for whatever reason, have just convinced themselves that this is just a game that it's going to be almost impossible to win. I don't agree. And I'm going to talk about some of those reasons why today. And then, of course, tomorrow we'll have our prediction show. But I got to admit, I've been disappointed at how much negativity there is among the Notre Dame fan base heading into this game. I'm actually shocked by it. I really thought that Notre Dame fans were going to be more excited. I think Notre Dame fans were I thought they would be more of, hey, yeah, you got to show me. I mean, I'm in show me mode. Marcus Freeman's got a lot to prove. The Notre Dame coaching staff has got a lot to prove. Notre Dame players have got a lot to prove. But man, if you're not excited now, It's disappointing, to be completely honest with you, that there's been that much of that. And maybe it's just that the negative people are the loudest and most people are encouraged. But I just don't understand, there even someone in the chat right now talking about A&M's rankings or this. Like, if you're constantly going to be looking for the things to be upset about and sad about and disappointed about, it's like, dude, I mean, that's a you problem. You might want to talk to somebody about that. You know what I mean? They got more 5 stars. They also have almost twice as many 3 stars or unranked players in their starting lineup as what Notre Dame has. So if you want to look for something to be upset about, you're going to find it most weeks. And we're not going to do that. We're not going to have emotional arguments today at Notre Dame. We're going to have factual ones, and we'll give analysis and opinions, and you'll know the difference between what is fact and what is opinion as we dive into today's show. And today's show is going to be it's a midweek rundown, so we kind of go through a lot of different things. Part one and part two are going to be looking at the on-paper matchup between Notre Dame and Texas A&M. which is made increasingly harder when you look at not only game one. It's always difficult to sort of do a statistical analysis of the first game of the year because teams are naturally different from what they were in previous seasons. It's even more difficult nowadays because so many teams are in situations where they're just their rosters are completely different, not only just from like it has in the past where you have to replace some guys, but you just have this giant influx of portal guys. What makes this matchup even more challenging is the idea that you've got three new coordinators in this game. Notre Dame has a new offensive coordinator, and obviously Texas A&M has two new coordinators on defense and obviously on the offensive side of the ball. And that's another area where there's this kind of this panic about how good Colin Klein was at Kansas State. And he was, while ignoring the fact that Notre Dame brought in the offensive coordinator who led the number one offense in the country last year. But I'm to believe, according to some, that Colin Klein's going to have a huge impact on Texas A&M's offense. But Mike Denbrock coming to Notre Dame is not going to have much of an impact because reasons. So that's just been kind of what I've been dealing with today. So, yeah, I'm a little bit kind of done with it, to be honest with you. So I'm going to be a little bit chippy today. I'm just letting you guys know because it's kind of struck my last nerve, to be completely honest with you. That doesn't mean I'm guaranteeing Notre Dame is going to win the game. Of course Notre Dame could lose this game. It's just the constant focus on negativity that I'm seeing, and I don't quite get where it comes from, right? Like, if they lose, then be negative, then focus on what happened when they lose. But how about enjoy these last moments before the season starts? That's what I'm going to do, and then we can deal with whatever happens on Saturday when it happens, and we can deal with it. So that's kind of where I'm at about where this team is going to be. So we're going to stack up those things. Part three and part four of the show are going to be looking at game wreckers. It's going to be a discussion of who are the players for Notre Dame that I think need to be the game wreckers for this matchup. And it's something that I'm going to do kind of on all the Wednesday shows. I think it's going to be a little bit of a different look of the guys that I think, whether it be talent-wise or matchup-wise, need to be those impact players for Notre Dame. And then on the same side is who are the players for Texas A&M's defense that you need to make sure don't become game wreckers for them. And it's not always the same. It's not always this guy versus this guy. You know, my game wreckers may be these guys, but they may not be matched up against the game wreckers for the other team. And then part four, we'll be looking at it from the opposite side. It'll be the Notre Dame defense and then looking at it from the standpoint of the Texas A&M offense and who they need to stop. And then the final segment of today's show will be our buy, sell, hold. As always, the buy, sell, hold is on Wednesday, is going to be at the end of the show. This is going to kind of start the time of the year when the buy, sell, hold will not be every submission gets responded to, because otherwise I'll be doing a five-hour show, and I just don't have the voice to do a five-hour show. So I picked some of the ones, like there were some that were really good, but they were more like down the road thinking to 2025, and I'm just not quite ready there. So a lot of great submissions that I had to turn down today, which I do never feel great about, but you know, I have a lot of work to get done the next couple of days before I fly down to Texas, and I just didn't feel like I could do a five-hour show today. But I promise you there's going to be lots of good stuff in today's show, lots of discussion, and then I'll, of course, get to your guys' great submissions at the end for our Bison Hold.
Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Unlike other apps on Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. I'm a Bears fan, so this one gets me really excited. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks because it's gone when September ends. Think Tyreek Hill will get more than 90.5 yards in week one? Aaron Jones runs for more than 66 and a half yards. Cook up hot takes with your friends and win real money this football season when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. Prize Picks also has college picks all ready to go for you as well. Get in before game one hits and you can predict how many passing yards your favorite college quarterback will hit. For me, I think Riley Leonard's going to go above 2,550 and a half yards, so I'm going to take that one. And I'm going to combine it with Quinn Ewers to throw 2,999 and a half yards. Put those together and bing, bang, boom, baby. I'm going to be a winner. You just wait and see. I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of depositing my first $10 and I received an instant $10 bonus. If you have the skills, you can play for a shot at turning your $10 into $1,000. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code IRISH on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, run your game. You've had Wendy's nugs dipped in sauce, but have you had them covered in sauce? Wendy's new saucy nugs takes the crispy and spicy nugs that you love and turn them up to 11. Choose between flavors like buffalo, honey barbecue, garlic parm, or if you're a real heat seeker, try spicy ghost pepper only on Wendy's signature spicy nugs. I dare ya. That's 7 delicious ways to try the nugs you already love. Pick a flavor, grab some extra napkins, and prepare to nug like you've never nugged before. For a whole new way to nug, it's gotta be Wendy's at participating U.S. Wendy's.
So I want to kick off part one of today's show with a discussion about the matchup, on-paper matchup between Notre Dame and Texas A&M. And the on-paper matchup is then built around the guys that are actually playing, right? And I'm going to try my best to give some really good context to this conversation because, as I said, it is a challenge to do this type of thing in week one anyway, and it's even more challenging when you're trying to do it with so much turnover from all these teams. You know, your Notre Dame coaches talked about it, but, I mean, just thinking off the top of my head, if you're trying to evaluate the players that you're going to go against, you're not only watching Texas A&M film to evaluate the players that are coming back and then the Duke film to evaluate what they did defensively. And then you also have to evaluate Kansas State film to see what Colin Klein did there. You may want to evaluate some Florida film under Jay Bateman, but I don't know that I'd spend a whole lot of time evaluating the Florida film. You have to consider evaluating Louisiana Tech film to watch Cyrus Allen. You have to watch Kansas State film on defense to evaluate Will Lee. You have to watch UAB film. You have to watch Florida film. I mean, there's so much film you have to watch of Kansas from O-line, Utah for the O-line. There's so much that you have to evaluate when looking at this type of thing. And it's the same thing that's true for Texas A&M to a degree, although the head coach obviously has a pretty good idea with about a couple of the main transfers from Notre Dame as far as what they can do. So it's going to be very interesting to see kind of how this holds up and or how this shakes out. But I do think there are some baseline discussions that we can have about this statistical matchup. And so we'll get things started by looking at the Notre Dame offense against the Texas A&M defense. So there's two reasons why I'm starting on this side of the ball. Number one is I normally start on offense. I'm an offensive guy. The other one is this is obviously the matchup that has got people talking the most. And this is the matchup that has people the most angst. I don't know a lot of Notre Dame fans, even the most pessimistic ones, who are thinking that A&M's just going to go out there and rip Notre Dame up. I mean, that's just not happening a whole lot. There are some concerns, obviously, about the Notre Dame defense from new linebackers and this guy, because apparently Notre Dame's the only team in college football that lost starters from last year and lost starters to the NFL. So that's obviously going to make winning tough, apparently, this year because nobody else lost anyone to the NFL last year, apparently. I'm sorry. I'm being a little salty today. It's just going to happen. You're just going to have to accept it. But or I hope that you can accept it, I should say. But looking at this matchup with the Notre Dame offense and the Texas A&M defense, and the run game is a very intriguing matchup. Even as much as yes, NY List says, yes, Brian, you are offensive. There's no doubt. I am an offensive guy. There's no doubt about it. But looking at this run game matchup, this is an area where there's a lot of things about Notre Dame's offense last year that were very perplexing, because the paper numbers didn't always back up what your eyes told you. And when you look at Notre Dame's rush offense last year, it was good. I mean, it was an offense that finished 28th in the country in yards, and even better numbers, yards per attempt. Notre Dame finished 13th in college football last year in yards per attempt, which is a very good average, especially when you consider that their starting quarterback provided very little running ability. I mean, I think Sam Hartman had minus 200 yards rushing last year, which makes that an even more impressive number. And so you look at it, tackles for loss allowed, they ranked 13th in fewest tackles for loss allowed. But it didn't always feel like, and I don't know, maybe you guys feel differently about this, but it didn't always feel like they were very good running the football, especially in some of the bigger games. You know, they rushed for 183 yards against Clemson, which on paper looked good, and they ran really well in the first half. But there was two long runs by the quarterback that were, one was off of just a busted coverage by Clemson. The other one was on a scramble, so it wasn't really a run play. And that padded the numbers a little bit, which is one of the benefits of having a mobile quarterback for this season. It didn't really do that much last year. Notre Dame ran for 176 against Ohio State, which is a pretty good number. And, you know, ran for 170 against NC State, 4.6 per carry, but like 80 that came on one carry. And there just was a lot of time. So after Central Michigan, they ran for 6.4 yards per carry against Central Michigan. But after that, they didn't go over 5 yards a carry until they got to the Clemson game and went for 5.9. So, I mean, that's a stretch of five games where you didn't get to 5 yards per carry. Closest they had was the Duke game where they were at 4.97, and a lot of that came in late in the game. So I never felt like the run game was quite as good as the statistics showed, because I never felt like this was a Notre Dame run team that could establish itself when it wanted to very often. And then part of it, you could argue, is – they didn't always enforce their will in maybe ways they could have or should have. And that's an interesting dynamic. And then you look at the flip side and you look at Texas A&M. And Texas A&M last year, for all their struggles, was a very good rush defense last season. Finished 14th in the country in yards per game. Now you could say, well, they weren't very good at defending the pass, which factored into that. That's fine. But they also finished 18th in yards per play, which sometimes you got to look at raw numbers of like yards and say, well, there's a lot of things that could go into yards. You know, what if you are a team that has a great starting field position? I've shared this before with you guys who are longtime listeners. I coached in a team 1 year. We won 10 games and averaged about 40 points a game, but we only averaged about 350 yards per game. Why? Our average starting field position was the 48-yard line, because we had a great defense and great special teams. And so even though our numbers wouldn't knock your socks off, we were a very good offense. But if we get the ball at the 40 going in, we can only get 40 yards. I mean, that's the best we can do. We can't ask our defense to spot us at, you know, hey, can you guys let them get down to the 20 first before you force a turnover, so that way we can have longer fields and pile up yards? You know, I think those are things that you have to take into consideration. So how do you gauge how good they were? Well, you look at the yards per attempt. And when you look at yards per attempt, then counter that with how many big plays you gave up. So Notre Dame was great in yards per attempt, but not, you know, they were good, but not elite in 20-plus runs. So they were at 26. So that means you were a pretty efficient offense when you did run the ball. And that's obviously something that this Notre Dame team is going to have to try to continue and even get better at, but that's also same was true for A&M last year. You know, they were not a team that gave up a lot of big runs last year, but, you know, gave up 12 and 13 games. So that's less than one a game. Finished 18th in yards per play. So obviously there was a lot of success there. And then when you look at their numbers, they had a couple games where they got ripped up relatively decently, really mainly one. Texas LSU ran for 154 yards on him last year, which numbers wise isn't great, but they did average 5.5 yards per game. And Jaden Daniels had 120 yards rushing, but Tennessee ran on him pretty good last year. Tennessee ran for 232 yards last year, just gashed him all game. But outside of that, I mean, they held six of their opponents to minus 100 yards rushing. That includes Miami. That includes Auburn. That includes Alabama. That includes Arkansas, South Carolina, Abilene Christian. They played Oklahoma State in a bowl game, and that was against Ollie Gordon, who was one of the top rushers in the country last year. They held Oklahoma State to 134 rushing yards, 4.6 yards per attempt. And then their other games, 131 to Ole Miss, but 3.97 per carry, 3.69 per carry against Mississippi State, held them to 133 yards. Auburn had 144 yards, but only 3.5 yards per carry. So this was a team that all season only once, I'm looking at the, make sure I got that correct. There was only one game last year where Texas A&M gave up over 5 yards a carry, only one game all year. It's a different story from where they were the year before, when they allowed five teams to go for over 5 yards a carry. Now, the team that did that against them last year was LSU, who obviously is the offensive coordinator, is now at Notre Dame. So this matchup to me is a very intriguing matchup. It's a matchup that pits a Notre Dame team that is very different looking than what it was a year ago when you come to the run game. They lose a 1,300-yard rusher in Audric Estime. They lose a first-round draft pick at left tackle. They lose a talented, although inconsistent, right tackle in Blake Fisher. And you're starting an offensive line with six career starts. That's the concerning part. The positive part is that the reason that Notre Dame has 27 starts on the bench, right, is because they got beat out by what the staff believes to be better players or players that performed better. So there's that balance. And I'm going to have a show segment coming out that I did with the guys at CFB Nation. And we talked about the CFB All-America show. And we talked about, you know, the offensive line. And there's the rub of, do you go with the veteran players that you know, you at least kind of know who they are in game one, and then, you know, make some decisions after that? Or do you just, if the younger guys are the better players, you just play them and just take your chances? And that's obviously the direction that Notre Dame went. And, you know, heck, I look at it and say that you don't really know what Notre Dame is going to be. There's a lot of understandable angst about the offensive line, especially going up against a very good defensive line for Texas A&M that also adds Nick Scowerton, although Purdue didn't have a very good run defense last year, despite having Scowerton and a couple other guys that were very productive in tackle for loss guys. They finished 45th in the country last year in rush defense. But it's a team that was, you know, pretty good stopping the run last season. Mike Elko's defense last year was a little inconsistent stopping the run, if we're being honest. It was a team that at times looked pretty good stopping the run. They certainly did a pretty good job against Notre Dame and shut Notre Dame down for most of that game. But then there was other games where they struggled to stop the run. You know, Clemson ran the ball very well on them in that game, yards-wise. Louisville ran for over 200 yards against them. North Carolina went for almost 200 yards against them. You know, Wake had a decent amount of yards against them last season. So there were some moments where they did struggle to run the football last season, especially against better opponents. Is that a talent thing? Is it a scheme thing? There's just so many different ways to look at it. But at the end of the day, the on-paper matchup, in my opinion, clearly favors Texas A&M. Not only does it favor Texas A&M statistically based off last season, but it favors them in regard to looking and projecting what we know about these teams now going in. And that that kind of goes into the aspect of, you do have so much unprovenness to the Notre Dame offense when it comes to the run game.
Light it.
Hey, Irish Breakdown listeners, it's Urban Meyer. This fall, the game changes. Join me, Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram, and broadcaster Rob Stone as we bring you a new perspective on football and culture every week. We will be joined by the biggest name in sports and talk about everything inside and outside of the lines. Let us guide you through a new era of college football. Watch Triple Option on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Now, what are the reasons to have optimism about Notre Dame in this matchup, even though I do give advantage Texas A&M in this particular part of the matchup? It's that while Notre Dame loses the big, you know, bell cow in Audric Estime from last season, what they do have is a lot more speed. They will be throwing a lot more speed out there, not only in Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, but also when you add the quarterback into the mix, there's a lot more dynamic playmaking ability. How you defend the Notre Dame run game has to change. If you're Texas A&M, you can look at these numbers and then you can focus on what Notre Dame lost, and that's fine, but you also have to now think about, okay, what's different? The run scheme is going to change. You have more dynamic playmakers at running back. You have more dynamic playmaker at quarterback. You have to defend outside anymore. You can't hard crash the edge like you did last year when Notre Dame was so much of a, you know, a between the tackles and pin and pull team where they were just trying to crash the edge and either blow up the inside runs or force Audric Estime to bounce. And that's not where you wanted Audric Estime to be if you were a Notre Dame coach. You did not want Audric Estime being forced to spill and bounce. You want him playing downhill. And so that's what teams did. If you crash the edge against Notre Dame this year, you leave yourself very vulnerable to the speed up the middle, but you also leave yourself very vulnerable to Riley Leonard and getting hit with, you know, getting hurt by Riley Leonard. So you have to just, you have to look at Notre Dame differently than you did last year, just like you have to look at A&M somewhat differently. But this is going to be one of, in my opinion, the toughest tests the Notre Dame run game is going to face all year. And we're going to learn a lot about this run this team early on. And it's not even about can they have 200 yards. Big thing for me is, do they compete? That's really what we're going to see is, do they compete? I don't expect them to consistently run the ball down Texas A&M's throat. I don't expect that at all. What they need to do, however, is find ways schematically and with their blocking to generate big plays. You can get beat on two plays in a row, but if you can just do your job on that next second down run and get a body on a body, you've got running backs and a quarterback that can go out there and make big plays in the run game. And that's going to be the key is, can they avoid the drive-killing mistakes in the run game? If you can avoid the drive-killing mistakes and just stay on track to some degree, and even if your first two runs and on first and second down only get you 3 yards, third and four is a good place to be. It's much better than being there in third and eight because you got 4 yards on the first play and then minus two on the second play. Stay on schedule, and that's going to where you're going to see Riley Leonard have a big impact, because when you've got a quarterback like Riley Leonard and the speed they have in third down in anything less than third and five or less is not a given that that's a passing situation. Even in passing situations, you have to be able to defend the run. So staying on track is going to be key for Notre Dame this matchup. And the yards may not be pretty and the yards per attempt may not be pretty, but if they can have some level of efficiency in this game and just avoid the negatives, that's going to give them an opportunity to then hopefully keep sustained drives, which the more you can sustain drives, the more opportunities you have to get your dynamic playmakers going in the run game. And the key is not gash them. The key is generate enough of those big play opportunities in a run game that it really alters what Texas A&M is trying to do. And that's really where we're going to be at. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing in this football game. But this is a matchup that on paper and then just what we expect to see is a matchup that favors Texas A&M as of right now. Now let's go to the matchup of the Notre Dame pass game against the Texas A&M pass defense. This is an interesting matchup because A&M doesn't have very impressive numbers. Notre Dame actually has pretty impressive numbers. They only finished 49th last year in total passing yards, but they were a top 10 team in pass efficiency, ranking ninth, and they were a top 15 team in yards per attempt, yards per completion, and passing touchdowns. They also ranked 30th in gains of 30 yards or more, and they were decent at avoiding sacks last year at times. The problem is they gave up too many pressures in big moments. You look at Texas A&M on the flip side, you know, they ranked outside the top 50 in passing yards per attempt, per completion, touchdowns allowed, fewest interceptions. They ranked 87th in interceptions, I should say, 76th in pass efficiency defense, and they ranked 76th after giving up 20 pass plays of 30 yards or more last season. The one thing they could do is get after the quarterback, and I fully expect that to be the case. But for all those who think, hey, you know, if they get after the quarterback, pass game's going to stink. Well, look, they got after the quarterback last year. They ranked eighth in college football last year in sacks, and they still ranked outside the top 75 in almost every category that I have mentioned here. And this is going to be the aspect that's going to be key for Notre Dame. Now, the counter argument that you can make against Notre Dame is that a lot of those numbers for Notre Dame that ranked you so high came in moments where you were clearly the superior team from a talent standpoint. You know, Notre Dame last year in the pass game really ripped up their bad opponents. Their first four games of the year against Navy, Tennessee State, and NC State and Central Michigan, where NC State was the only good team they played, they were at least 10.1 yards per attempt in each game. They were at 11.9 yards per attempt against Pitt, who was not very good. They were 9.2 against Wake, who wasn't very good. 9.3 against Stanford, who wasn't very good. 12.2 against an Oregon State team whose half their secondary didn't play in that game because they were transferring out. So against the better teams on the schedule, which I think we would all agree, NC State, Ohio State, Duke, Louisville, USC, and Clemson were the six best teams in the schedule last year. That's not arguable in my opinion. It's NC State game was good, 11.9 yards per attempt, but 7 against Ohio State, 7.2 against Duke, 6.7 against Louisville, 6.3 against USC, 4.9 against Clemson. So they weren't great against some of the better defenses and the better teams. The question is Texas A&M one of those better teams? And then the next question is this the same Notre Dame team that it was last year? And the answer is no, it's not. That doesn't mean it's going to be better. Doesn't mean it's going to be worse. It means we don't know. And that's what makes this part of the matchup so intriguing and so interesting, is because there is so much turnover in these two units. You've got a brand new coordinator for Texas A&M. You've got a brand new offensive coordinator for Notre Dame. You've got a brand new quarterback for Notre Dame. A lot of new receivers. There's going to be more receivers in the rotation that didn't play much last year or weren't on the team last year than there will be guys that matched up for Notre Dame last season. And then you look at the offensive line, that's very different. And you ask yourself, well, can they hold up enough to allow them to make some of those plays? And then you look at the secondary for Texas A&M, and you've got Tyreek Chappell comes back. You've got Dalton Brooks comes back, who's a regular. Bryce Anderson played a lot last year, but a lot of their secondary are new players. You've got Will Lee transfer from Kansas State, B.J. Mays from UAB, Des Ricks came from Alabama. You've got a lot, and that's just part of the new faces that they're going to have in the secondary this year. They've got new line. You know, Torian York comes back, but he's supposed to be flanked by a guy that transferred in from another school from last season. So you're going to have a lot of new faces at Texas A&M too. And so the question is who more quickly adapts to the offense? That's the question. Does the Notre Dame offense with the newcomers and the new system adapt quicker than all the Texas A&M players in their new system? That's going to be the interesting part of this matchup. And there's a lot of things that I believe give Notre Dame an advantage in this. And I do have this being advantage Notre Dame, because when I look at this matchup, I evaluate the Texas A&M players and I look at what they did at their old stops. And I say, you know, Will Lee was a solid player at Kansas State. He was not a world beater at Kansas State. When I look at B.J. Mays at UAB, it's a good player there. He was not a world beater there. He was a guy that I think fits this system very well. And they'll both be very good there. Des Ricks was a highly ranked player, but didn't do a whole lot in his first season at Alabama, in his one season at Alabama. So there's a lot of different aspects to this that you've got to kind of ask yourself a little bit, like, okay, how good are they really? How talented are they really? And the answer is we really don't know. But, you know, when you look at a guy like B.J. Mays, for example, at UAB last year, a good football player, gave up 24 completions last year, allowed 51.1% completion percentage. He allowed 276 yards. He had one touchdown allowed, two interceptions, eight breakups, according to Pro Football Focus. That's pretty good numbers. But again, it was one of those situations where, you know, who did they play? How did he perform in some of the bigger moments? He gave up three completions on four attempts for 31 yards against Georgia. Against North Texas, he gave up eight catches on 11 attempts for 142 yards. And, you know, so he had some very good moments and some moments that maybe weren't so great. So how good is he going to be in this system? I don't know the answer to that question. His film's good, but he's a guy that, you know, you have to be willing to go after and attack. You look at Will Lee in Kansas State, who, again, very good football player. I like Will Lee. He's 6'3". He's a good football player. But is he a guy that, you know, Notre Dame is just in a situation where, they can't throw on this guy? We'll find out. I don't know the answer to that. There were some transfer players that Notre Dame's receivers struggled against last year. You look at what they did against Louisville. You look at what they did. I'm trying to remember the other game. There was another. Oh, Duke is another one where Duke had new corners, and the receivers had some moments where they didn't play that well in that game. So they're going to have to step up, and they're going to have to perform. Will Lee, again, good player, gave up 23 completions last year on 36 attempts, 63.9% completion rate, gave up 406 yards last year, 4 touchdowns, had 2 picks and 6 pass breakups. He's a good football player. I think he fits this system really well. That's something I do like about him. And he had some good moments against some good teams, and he had some struggles against some teams that were pretty good throwing the football. So what's Notre Dame going to do against them? I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out. But I like the matchups. And here's the other thing I'll say. I do think this is a defense that is vulnerable to success between the numbers. And when you look at what Mitchell Evans did to this defense last year, for example, they had no answers. No answers for Mitchell Evans last year. Notre Dame didn't have Jaden Greathouse in the matchup against Duke last year. I think that could have had an impact in that game. Absolutely could have an impact in that game because he was really starting to kind of come into his own last season. And now you've got to take advantage of that. But at the end of the day, if you're going to really hurt Duke or hurt Texas A&M throwing the football, you're going to have to win some of those outside matchups. And honestly, I like the matchups of Bo Collins and Jaden Thomas and Chris Mitchell and even Jordan Faison getting some looks against this Texas A&M secondary. So it's going to be an intriguing matchup. And some, Andrew Gilmore just said, I bet A&M will play press man on the wide receivers. I would expect that they try to double Evans. If they try to double Evans, that's great for Notre Dame. It's very, because if you're doubling a tight end who's playing, from the hashes inside, that's a lot of guys inside, which is going to leave you some opportunities on the outside. If you try to press a guy like Chris Mitchell, for example, you better hope it works, because you do not have 4-4 guys at cornerback. You've got tall, long guys, and if you don't win that press on the outside against Chris Mitchell, you're toast, especially if you're doubling against Mitchell Evans. So to your point, Andrew, is I don't think that you're incorrect there. I think they will press the Notre Dame receivers. I do think that they will try to say, hey, look, we're not going to let Mitchell Evans beat us. I would absolutely do that if I was Texas A&M. So then the question is, as you said, can the Notre Dame receivers make them pay? That's going to be a big part of this matchup. And if they do get open, can Riley Leonard hit them? If I'm Texas A&M and I know Riley Leonard like I do, the one thing I'm going to say is I'm going to force Riley Leonard to throw the ball downfield. And there's going to be two reasons for that. Number one, I know that that's the part of his game where he can be the most inconsistent. Number two, I don't think he's going to have enough time to get the ball down the field. That's what I'm banking on. I'm playing aggressively with my outside corners. I'm going to press them. I'm going to come up. I'm going to take away quick game. I'm going to try to take away some of the screen game. I'm going to force them to throw the ball down the field. Does Notre Dame have the playmakers on the outside to hurt them? I think they do. But having them on paper is different than executing. But I do think this Notre Dame receiving core with Chris Mitchell, with Jordan Faison, with Jaden Greathouse, with Jaden Harrison, with KK Smith, with Bo Collins has a lot more playmaking ability than what Notre Dame had on the outside last year. And the other part is Notre Dame had Tobias Merriweather open twice for big plays last year. Hartman missed him the first time. Tobias dropped it the second time. Do they make those plays this year? That's going to be a big part of this conversation. And I'm looking forward to seeing if they're going to be able to do that. But on paper, I certainly believe this is an advantage for Notre Dame based on the numbers from last year and the personnel matchup of who they are this year. I do think Notre Dame has the – I think Duke actually had a better cornerback situation last year than A&M has this year, in my opinion, especially if they move Tyreek Chappell inside. And we'll talk more about him later. Let's wrap this up with a final look at the Notre Dame offense against the Texas A&M defense. You look at it, and if you compare last year's numbers, Notre Dame was better in points per game. Their offense ranked 7th. A&M's defense ranked 36th. A&M was better in yards. They ranked 19th in yards. Notre Dame ranked 29th. But the Irish ranked 9th in yards per play. Texas A&M ranked 40th in yards per play allowed. Notre Dame's red zone offense ranked 47th. A&M's ranked 69th on defense. Notre Dame's red zone touchdown offense ranked 16th. A&M's ranked 40th. A&M has the advantage on third down. They ranked 18th, but Notre Dame was 24th. Notre Dame ranked 29th last year in most plays of 30 yards or more. A&M ranked 46th. Notre Dame ranked 13th in fewest turnovers lost. A&M only ranked 112th in turnovers forced. So on paper, Notre Dame has the advantage. I believe that Notre Dame has the advantage from a skill standpoint. A&M is adding a defensive staff that will be led by their head coach. And it's a defense that was good last year, but not dynamic, not an elite defense. Last year, Duke gave up 19 points per game, which, again, was a good number. They were a good team last year on defense. That ranked them last season 16th in scoring defense. So, obviously, that was improvement over what Texas A&M was last season. The Duke defense also ranked last season 42nd. In yards allowed per game. Obviously, Texas A&M was better. There's reasons for that. And then Duke last year ranked 28th in yards per play. So the two most important numbers of those three, I believe that points per game and yards per play are more important than total yards. Duke's adding a system that was more effective last season. There's no doubt about it. Notre Dame is also adding an offensive coordinator that was more effective. So Notre Dame's offense ranked 7th and 9th last year in points and yards per play. They're adding the offensive coordinator who led the nation in both of those categories last season and also led the nation, I believe, in total offense last year. He was, yes, number one in total offense by 12 yards, and they were also number one in yards per play, and, of course, they ranked number one last year in scoring. So both teams have added coaching, have added a system or a coach at the top that led better units of what they have on paper. Then you have to look at, okay, what about the new additions? Obviously, A&M's new additions up front were very good. Their perimeter additions are upgrades for them, but I don't know that they're more upgrades than what Notre Dame will have in regard to their upgrade. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup, but I believe that it's really hard for me to argue that Notre Dame doesn't hold the advantage here. They hold the advantage statistically. The new coaches that they added for Notre Dame were more effective than the coaches were for Texas A&M. Obviously, A&M didn't, the current players, they held their own against LSU last year, but they certainly, and they did a pretty good job 2 years ago when they beat LSU 2 years ago, or with Dembrock there. Last year, LSU won 42-30. They gave up only 389 yards, but they gave up 7.5 yards per play. They just didn't have the ball a ton in that game because the LSU defense was a hot mess and couldn't get off the field in that game. But obviously, he's a coach that went against Jay Bateman last year. Mike Dembrock did and had a lot of success against Jay Bateman's offense at Florida. Last season, they scored 52 points, had 701 yards of offense and 11.5 yards per play. So I don't know that Jay Bateman's going to add a whole lot of value to, hey, how do we stop this this Mike Dembrock offense? Because they were not able to do it the last couple of years. So the year before, LSU scored 45 points on Florida, had 528 yards of offense and 7.5 yards per play. So I just think it's advantage Notre Dame. The one, and we've talked about this a lot, the one potential caveat is the offensive line versus the defensive line. That could be the great neutralizer. If Notre Dame can just hold their own there, then I think that they're going to be okay, but we'll dive more into that tomorrow. So that's it for the offensive breakdown. And next, I'm going to dive into a breakdown of the Notre Dame defense.